If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Amateur Traveler, episode 866. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about fjords and glaciers and icebergs, sled dogs, explorers, and disco as we go to Greenland. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Greenland.
I'd like to welcome to the show Rebecca Merrill, who's coming to us from menopause.com, which we will talk to her about what that means later. But she's come to talk to us about a cruise to Greenland. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be here.
And one little behind the scenes thing, sometimes people will pitch me shows and I'll say, actually quite often, no, I don't think that's interesting enough for Amateur Traveler. It's not really what I'm looking for. Rebecca pitched me a show and I said, no, that's too interesting. And the reason I did is that if we talk about this cruise, they're probably not going to have me come on because I can't offer them to have them talk about the show. But it just sounded like an interesting cruise. So I thought we would do it anyway, even though it means that I may not be able to talk them into having me on board. But Rebecca, why should someone do a cruise to Greenland?
Someone should do a cruise to Greenland if they're looking to go somewhere remote without a lot of people and if they have an interest in the Arctic.
Excellent. That was succinct and well put. And when we talk about cruise here, I'm suspicious that I may not be finding the shows on board or the art auctions or the casino.
Absolutely not. Like you said, this is an expedition cruise. So what you will find is a number of expedition leaders who are PhDs in Arctic ice, environmental science, wildlife biology, okay. A great opportunity to listen to lectures on a brand new ship. This is actually only their eighth expedition. It's the Ocean Albatross is the one of two ships that is run by Albatross Expeditions out of Denmark. And this ship, while it does have two jacuzzis, sauna, a little workout room, is really more focused on learning about the Arctic and getting to know these small settlements along the west coast of Greenland.
Okay. And this is not a big ship. We're not talking something with the big water slide parks either. How big a ship are we talking about?
So this is about 100.4 meters, and it can hold up to 300 persons and about 102 crew. So it's a nice size of a ship. You don't feel crowded. There's space for everybody. Great viewing decks for the wildlife. And the food is excellent. And the staff, very professional.
Excellent. Tell us more about your itinerary. Where did you start and what did you do?
We flew from Iceland to Greenland. And I think it's important to note for your listeners that the only way to get to Greenland is either from Copenhagen or Reykjavik in Iceland. We arrived in Iceland, spent a few days, and then got on our chartered airplane to Kangerlussuaq, which is a former U.S. base, even though we still have some U.S. military there. This is basically a large airport, and the ship is based in this fjord at the point of embarkation. So we left Kangerlussuaq and headed up to our first town, which is Sisimiut. And this is the second biggest city in Greenland next to Nuuk, which is the capital. And Sisimiut means foxhole. It's the fastest growing city in Greenland, and people have been there for 4,500 years, Chris. It's got a lot of history.
4,500 years?
Yes, yeah, so you have the...
Okay, so these are Inuit people or native people.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
So you have the Sakak people, then the Dorset, then the Tule, and then the Inuit descendants from that. And so there is a lot of history from the time of migrating over from Siberia when all those geographic plates were connected. And of course, now they're not. But another interesting thing about that is that Greenland does not have trees. So a lot of the buildings that were made in these towns were made from driftwood that came from Siberia. So interesting point there.
I wouldn't think you would get enough driftwood to build a town.
Apparently they did. And a lot of these museums that you go into are made from that. And now the homes that are there are made of the of composite so that they don't have to keep repainting them. And the roofs are slanted so that the snow comes off of that in the wintertime. But it is interesting to see Greenland, one of the largest ice caps in the world, but no trees, a lot of amazing, stunning mountains and cliffs and mossy green rocks surrounding the areas, but no trees.
So now you say you flew into, and I'm not going to be able to do any of these Greenland names. Kangerlussuaq.
Kangerlussuaq, yeah.
Did you get a chance to see that, or did you go on straight to your first stop?
We landed there, and they took us in a bus for a drive around, which was really not a very nonplussed experience. I think they just needed to do something with us before we got on to the ship, because they were still getting things ready for us. There's nothing really to see in Kangerlussuaq. The last day when we returned, you could go for an optional barbecue out on a nearby glacier. But at this point, we'd seen so many amazing glaciers that my travel partner and I didn't feel the need to do that. So it's really just the basics there. You're not going to really stay there. It's really more of a launching off pad. And so in Sisimiut, one thing to highlight is when you enter these small towns, there's several buildings that are all different bright colors, which some of you have probably seen on documentaries. And those were colors for a specific reason in the past. So if you see a red building, that might have been an administrative building or a school. The yellow building was a hospital. The blue building was either maintenance or where they were basically handling all the fish and processing the fish that they caught. And then the green buildings were communications. That's not the case these days, but that is what the history is behind the colors of those homes, which is just very charming and scenic when you arrive upon these towns. And the museums in each of these towns are also so worthwhile. They have so much history and cultural aspects to them regarding the history of fishing, hunting, whaling. And one of the museums in Sisimiut is the church, a workshop, a traditional turf house made of peat and stones.
Okay.
So there's a lot to see once you land to these. So we had that first night in Sisimiut, and then we headed off to Kekertarsuaq. And believe me, it took a long time to figure out how to say that word. But it's fun too, though. So this is the former capital of North Greenland, another picturesque town, and it's on Disko Island, a name that's got a catchy tune to it. Can't forget it, right? Disko Island is in the famous Disko Bay, known for its plethora of icebergs. And this was my favorite town. For whatever reason, I just really fell in love with it. We attended a folk dancing a demonstration at the community center, which my partner and I got sucked into doing some of the local dances with them, which was comedic at most. And then another set of museums.
And are the local dances disco? That would really be my question.
That would be, not quite. Although there was a couple moves there where I thought, hey, I'm going to take that home and try it on the next wedding I go to. I'm going to pull out these moves and see maybe I can get a little attention. They were charming and actually very functional because this is how a lot of the locals get their workouts in the wintertime. So when it's okay. dark and cold outside, they go to the community center, and just doing one dance with them, I was already breaking a sweat, and they had done about seven of them at that point during the performance. And it's very traditional to have coffee and cake after meeting with the locals. So we did that a couple different times throughout the week, which was great to just say hello and visit with them.
Okay.
The museums in Qeqertarsuaq also had history of Dutch sailing and whaling and some really stunning scenery around this area. We did a hike up to a waterfall, and around this town, you have these huge mountains, and some of them reach 1,000 meters, and they look like upside down Vs that drop into the sea, and they're brick colored, and they're just stunning scenery. I think I said, wow, on this trip, probably 1,000 times. It just kept coming out of my mouth every destination we went to and while we were sailing on the ship. So after Qeqertarsuaq, we went to Umanak Island, which is now you're north of the Arctic Circle. There are about 1,400 people that live on this heart-shaped mountain island, hence the name Place Where the Heart Is. This island had some really fun aspects to it. One of them is you hike about an hour over rocky terrain to this famous little house facing the bay that is the Santa Claus house. And okay. this goes back to a Danish TV show, which I will butcher this name, called Nissenbaden i Grønland, which means the elf gang in Greenland. And the Danish people on this trip, of which was probably 80%, just giggled with laughter. They had grown up with this TV show, and to actually see the real house where this was filmed was a delight for them. They've kept it the same since it had been filmed in the early 1900s. Nothing has changed. The props are still there. There's a large red postal box in town with letters to Santa that is still there. And the walk itself is beautiful. There are Arctic wildflowers that were still in bloom, and they were coming to the end of the season. Beautiful views of icebergs all around you, and probably 100 sled dogs, which you will see in a lot of these towns. And the sled dogs, just to note, the Greenlandic sled dog is its own breed. Okay. And there are no other dogs that are allowed to come to Greenland. They really were trying to keep that breed without any contamination. There's a rumor that they're allowing lap dogs in Nuuk, but this is to be debated. At this point, the Greenlandic sled dogs are chained because they are working dogs. So you will often walk by several at a time, and you're very tempted to go up and pet them, but you'll see signs that say, please do not touch my dogs. They are resting for the winter, for when they will be running hard across the snow and ice with sleds. The puppies can roam around on their own up to 5 months, and I did have a chance to interact with a couple of them, which were absolutely adorable. But in general, you are deterred from approaching them while they are chained, and a lot of them have their own sort of little doghouse that they can go into if they feel like they don't want to be outside in the elements. But that is something that you will see from town to town.
Okay. I want to pause here for a second and talk a little bit about the topography in terms of what I'm seeing. So when I'm in the towns, I'm seeing colorfully painted houses. I'm not seeing trees or forests of any kind. Is this the landscape flat? Is it mountainous? You mentioned the one mountain, V-shaped. And
a heart-shaped one, yes.
Heart-shaped one, yep.
And then when you're looking at the landscape from the ship, it looks like mm-hmm. upside down Vs in terms of the canyons, the gorges. You see a okay. lot of waterfalls. So what you're looking at is craggy mountainous scenery with ice patches across the top, because again, 90% of Greenland is the ice cap. So mm-hmm. you're not going to be penetrating much further inland when you're going on these cruises. This is rocky ports with mm-hmm. roads, and there are cars and there are small golf carts, and you can tell that they use the snowmobiles in the wintertime, mm-hmm. but it is a rocky type of environment with kind of a light mossy grass that runs across it here, at least this time of year. And then the Arctic flowers that just peek out both in yellow, white, and in a beautiful pink one, which is the national flower of Greenland. Which I've heard called River Beauty or Willow Herb. And they also have another flower called the earmouse flower. This precious to see them growing amongst these large rocks, but you are not landing on a flat area to walk around. So this is something to consider.
Well, the other question for you, and I was seeing that in some ways, the island that you're on now, which is Uummannaq or something like that?
Yes, Uummannaq. Yep.
Uummannaq. Okay, I wasn't sure whether you pronounced the two U's separately or not. If you didn't have it covered with snow, there portions of the rocky scenery that could have been the Southwest. It looked like even mesas and things like that. It's just that I'm seeing pictures of it in wintertime, in which case it looks very different. But you were there what time of year?
So this was August of this year.
Okay.
So the weather for us was perfect. We had sunny, clear days the entire time. So we were very lucky for that. And it allowed for just remarkable vistas and views of, as we get into the itinerary further, the glaciers, the ice fjords. This was all much more enjoyable, I assume, because we did not have cloud and rain on this trip.
Okay. And before we started recording, you were mentioning that the boat you're on is actually an icebreaker, can break up to, did you say 2 to 4 feet of ice?
Yes, 2 to 4 feet of ice. It's called a Polar Class 6 ship. And they do take it to Antarctica as well. So they basically trade off between the Arctic and Antarctica.
Got it. And this time of year, though, the water is all clear, or are there still icebergs and such that you're avoiding or running into?
You're seeing icebergs all the time. So in Disco Bay, they were everywhere. And I have to mention, we did do the polar plunge. Yes, we jumped in to 35 degree water, just to say we did it. And it was very refreshing.
That's another word for it.
Yes, refreshing. One other thing I did want to mention about the Uummannaq Island Museum is they had a fantastic mummified sweater from a young girl that's 450 years old, made of bird skins and feathers, as well as narwhal bladders. So these you couldn't put that together if you tried, but this was amazingly preserved. And these museums have a lot of dioramas, if you will, but also showcasing the materials that are used by the locals, the seal skins that they are still today are allowed to skin seals and use those for their sleds or for clothes, and the various tools that they use, harpoons and knives, etc. So these museums really give you a great idea about how things were done in the past and how some things are still traditional today, including eating whale.
You were saying that they're allowed to do that. And of course, the question is, how much impact does that have? So I was looking at the population of Greenland, and the total population of the nation, the world's largest island. Isn't Greenland the world's largest island? It's up there in the running. Is 56,000 people.
Yes. So you have about 20,000 in Nuuk. You have about 5,000 in Sisimiut, and probably another maybe 6,000 in Sisimiut and another 5,000 in Ililisit. And then the rest is scattered. And yes, not a big population. And if that's what you're into, this is a great place to visit. And I love getting off the beaten path and going places where there aren't a lot of people. And another thing to mention is that they are building a large airport in Ililisat, and that will probably connect to North America. So this will become a destination pretty quickly, and I hope that it will be done in a eco-friendly
thoughtful
way.
Yes,
because there is a lot to keep traditional and sacred here, I think. We did move on to the Akeep Sirmia Glacier. This was an unbelievable glacier with just massive ice formations. We watched some ice calving where the ice comes down and crushes and plunders into the sea. Quite a sight. And we had a barbecue on the ship that day with beautiful views. And that was a true delight. And the waters and the ice, they change in several different hues of blue based on how much oxygen is in the ice. And of course, we learned that while we were on the ship from our expedition leader. So the blues can just be cellulane and crystal and just gorgeous.
I have a picture from a Alaska trip where we were up near a glacier and three different pieces of ice right next to each other with great variety in terms of the colors of blue, going from a real royal blue to more of the clear or white. So just beautiful. It's interesting to say that ice is beautiful, but it certainly is in this case.
It is. And I guess the bluer it is, the older it is. That was another little factoid that I learned. So we pulled, after that glacier, we pulled into Ililisat. And again, this is the third largest town, home to two large fishing factories for halibut and cod. Okay. So you see those right when you pull in the port. It's a busy port and everybody's got their own boat and they go out and fish. And this is also home to the UNESCO site for the Ililisat Ice Fjord. And this was really the highlight of the trip. You can book a scenic flight over this if you wish. Unfortunately for the guests who booked it on our ship, they could not do it because it was a little too cloudy, so they decided not to do it. But we were able to go out on a small boat, and everybody took turns. There was probably 10 people in my boat, and we moved into the ice fjord. We saw some humpback whales. There are fin whales and seals there too. We did not see any on the trip that I was on, but anyway, this particular ice fjord is 6 miles wide, a glacier, and its frozen structures come from about 43 miles deeper into the fjord from the Sermek-Kujalek Glacier, and I'm sure I'm not saying that right. But this glacier calves at a rate of 82 feet per day, and that's like incredibly, yeah, I think that's the fastest in Northern Hemisphere or on the planet.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
So there's very few places that the Greenland ice cap meets the sea, but this is one of them. And the icebergs and the ice structures around you are massive. They're as high as skyscrapers, as wide as the football stadium. And as you cruise through these waters, you have waterfalls as the water melts and empties into the sea. These beautiful hues of blue We did watch another calving of ice. We saw structures, arches, several beautiful structures throughout this two-hour trip. And I have to say, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And you can smell the ice. It sounds odd, but there is a scent when you're in there. It's a very striking scent. And it's probably like being in your freezer, but like 10 times that. It's just a very unique scent. And I thought that was unexpected for me. I didn't think that there would be a scent for that. But that is a striking trip. Beautiful. The other way you can see that is if you walk up through town, you will pass, again, a number of sled dogs that are within their own compounds. And as you come up and over, there is a ice museum that is gorgeous modern architecture. You can actually walk across the top of the roof. And inside is a cafe,
okay,
a little gift shop. But they have a walkable plank that heads you down to the shore of the ice fjord. So you can see it from the land side as well. And that is really a beautiful sight. So if you don't have an opportunity to be on a small boat, you can come from the other side. There is a museum, the Nude Rasmussen, the famous polar explorer was born there. But this museum shows the spears, kayaks, sledding, clothing, really informative on the local culture there and history. And then in town, of course, we found the brewery, the Imiak Brewery, which we ended up, a couple other people on this ship, we ended up staying till some of the wee hours just sampling the crowberry ale. And the crowberry is a berry that is basically harvested in late summer in Iceland and Greenland, and they make jams out of it and salts and various things. So we felt it was necessary and upon ourselves to sample this, and it was absolutely delicious. There's another Greenlandic beer called the Kayak, but they spell it Q-A-J-A-K. And that was another delicious IPA and ale. So they certainly have picked up a great hobby for hops and highly recommend it. And they do make great cake. So there's some culinary specialties that I really like there along those lines. In terms of halibut and cod, dried cod, we did try the muskox, and that is an animal that is an Arctic animal that looks like an ox, but has incredibly warm hair and fur that is used to make scarves and neck warmers and mittens and things like that. We tried reindeer. We were offered mink whale and whale dried skin and seal blubber, none of which I tried. They do have a quota to kill minke whales, and that is part of the Inuit culture and tradition. So that is something that people should be aware of and maybe take the line of respecting the local culture. May not be our way of doing things, but they still engage in skinning seals, and they actually did that for us in one of the small towns. There's not a endangerment of those seals, so there's not a quota as far as I know. They also hunt the narwhals. So one of the things to be careful of when you're shopping, there's not a lot of shopping here, but there are some things they offer either near the boat or in the museum. You need to ask what those things are made of, because they do sell some necklaces made of whalebone. There was a beautiful kayak sculpture that I loved, but it was made with some narwhal bone. And we cannot bring those things back into America or most of Western Europe. You want to ask first what the items are made of. They make a lot of things from the reindeer antlers. So I have one or two things I brought back that were made from those, which is legal. So these are just a couple of things.
And you have to make sure your sweater wasn't knit with narwhal bladders.
Yes, there's that too, because I'm sure that's sweeping the nation. So yeah, we had to make sure there's no narwhal bladders involved. There are other items you can buy, like the Arctic herbs and the soap. And other items that are easy to bring home. But it's just to note that you might want to ask first on some of those items that are made with bone.
Okay. Before we get too far from the small boat cruise, just for those who haven't been on a small boat seeing glaciers calve, I would want to discourage you from the notion that you're going to go up and touch the glacier. Because there's large blocks of ice falling off. So you get, what distance were you away from the glacier? I'm sure it felt closer as a large chunk of ice is falling off.
Yes, we were well away from anything that was calving, that both at the Akeep Glacier and at the ice fjord. So they are very, safety is a huge priority. And there was no danger on a part of where we were or how close we got. I was using my telephoto lens, and wasn't as close as I would have liked to have been.
You were probably as close as you would have liked to have been without realizing it.
This is true. Yeah. I definitely don't want to get hit by a flying piece of ice.
No.
It wouldn't be a good way to go.
Well, it can also come up from the bottom, depending on the glacier and how it connects with the water. So depending on where you are, the ice might be coming at you from all directions.
Certainly,
but still an amazing experience.
Yeah, and we've all watched Titanic, but 90% of the iceberg is underwater. So
right.
If you're looking at the surface, and some of these ice structures in the ice fjord are actually connected to rock. So some of them aren't going to move, and others are going to come out from the glacier that's further back and melt and move into Disco Bay and float away. It just depends on where you are within that ice fjord. But the interesting thing, too, is it's very deep there, which I would not have guessed. So some of those spots is 200 or 300 meters deep, which was a surprise to me.
Interesting. And by the time you're here, you're more than a third of the way up the west coast of Greenland.
Yes. So when we circled through the Disco Bay area by going to Kekertarsuaq and then around into Umanak Island, and then now we're like, as we hit Ililuset, we're essentially starting to head a little back to where we came from.
Okay.
In a sense, you're coming through the Disco Bay, and then we head back out to sea and then go back into another small fjord to the town of Sarfenguit, which is about 40 people. And this is, yeah, it's very small. We went to their community center where they offered us the reindeer that they had just hunted a couple of days before and a few items to sell. They do a lot of bead work as well as some paintings and some of these muskox products, which are very expensive, I might add. But what was neat about Sarfenguit was that they had a modern glass igloo that's sitting there up by their cemetery. You take a short walk up there, and it was just a neat structure to see that they wanted to have some kind of monument there. And then after Sarfenguit, we headed back to Kangerlussuaq, where we disembarked. So that was the whole roundabout itinerary. As far as I know, they do some itineraries to eastern Greenland as well, that supposedly those cliffs are even higher, which is hard to believe. And this is also not an expedition that you're going to see polar bears on. We're too far south. So if that's what your goal is, you're probably better off taking an expedition to Svalbard in Norway.
Okay. Which we just talked about recently. The question I had for you, as you're cruising up the coast, is there a lot of wildlife viewing, or it's a rugged cliff coast? Okay.
No, so I should say you're seeing a lot of birds. I've just started to get into the bird thing. So I have fun with my bird app in terms of they have a lot of kittiwakes, Iceland gulls, Arctic terns, northern fulmars. Okay. I did see a blue-winged teal duck, which was gorgeous, and a lot of the glaucous gulls. So you will see this bird life. And then in terms of the whales, a lot of that is just luck. We saw a humpback, you could see the fin. It just depends on how it goes.
Most interesting wildlife sighting on the trip?
Oh my goodness, that's a tough one. I wish I had seen a muskox and the Arctic hare and the Arctic fox and all that, but they were a bit elusive. So I think for me, I really enjoyed the birds and the variety in the Arctic, and just knowing that some of these birds do make some migrations. And so I think the Arctic terns and the northern fulmars were amazing to see. So I would go with that. And I think that if you were in further north in Greenland, then you're going to have a little bit more option for wildlife. I think the beautiful part about this trip is just the landscape you're seeing from this ship and how huge it is and vast, and there's nobody there. So it's just a lot of awe-inspiring moments.
And what is a typical day like? You mentioned going into the towns. Is that pretty much what you're doing? You sail from town to town and then go in and explore the town, or are there days where you're out in little inlets or things? Okay, you're in the...
So you're getting off and you're walking around, and usually there an expedition leader will say, okay, we're going to do a hike, for example, to the Santa Claus house. That was about a 4-mile round trip, and the hike that we did in Kekertarsalak was probably 3 miles. So you're getting some
active
exercise.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you. There were several aboard who were older and just wanted to stay and enjoy the ship, and they have a little library there, and again, a lot of nice decks for viewing. And those who wanted to be active like us got out and hiked around and walked around, and we had a chance to have a conversation with a local person, then we would do that. There are a lot of hiking trails in Ililisat, and there was a gentleman on the ship with us who was actually scoping out the opportunity to do a marathon in Ililisat.
Okay.
Just to give you an idea that there are some areas where you can do a lot more walking than others. And I would say Sisimiut and Ililisat were bigger towns where if you wanted to just go off and walk and explore and take pictures and that kind of thing, that you can do that. Whereas someplace like Sarfanguit, which was our last stop, was just too small. You would take a half an hour to walk up to the cemetery, see the monument, and then come back down to the port. It's very quick.
Yeah, if you're interested in hearing more about hiking possibilities, the last time we did a show on Greenland, we talked about a 7 to 12 day route called the Arctic Circle Trail. So go back in the archives and listen to that show if you're wanting to get out into the wilderness a little more, with probably not quite the same kind of dining that you experienced on the boat. Or
yeah, probably a little different, but that's okay. You want to try the local things as well. And I think it would probably be really great to do some of those sled rides with the dogs in the wintertime. That would be quite an adventure, I'm sure. And they're strong animals, so yeah, they get far with them.
Did you want to tell us anything more about the boat experience itself?
We had a small deck off of our cabin, which was great. There was one evening where we just had a spectacular sunset. The sun was setting a little bit later in the evening, obviously, because we're further north. And I would say great amount of space within the cabin. I felt like there was enough room for everybody, didn't feel crowded. You get up in the morning, have your breakfast, and usually they would have a option for morning. Here's what we're going to do. And in the afternoon, after you got back, there would be a room. The room is filled for a lecture on Arctic ice or a lecture on humpback whales. So there was plenty of room to be comfortable. And there were also a translator for those who spoke German. So either English or German were the official languages of the ship for that, in case you don't speak either one. But the way that the ship was laid out was very, very comfortable and very warm inside. And the staff was great, very helpful. I really can't say much else other than positive things about the ship itself.
And I see that the back of the ship has Zodiac docks for the inflatable rafts with the outboard motors. Do you use those to get into town, or you pull up to docks, or is it a combination?
We did
two?
Both.
Okay.
It was a combination of the two. The only wet landing we did was for a very small town where they skin the seal. And they have boots for you if you want to get out of the Zodiac and you're landing on like the beach area.
Yep.
But we, most of the time, I want to say, we got into the Zodiac and then went to shore. There were maybe one or two ports where we actually just walked off the ship in the port. And then in another time, we walked off the ship off the port. Then they had to move the ship because the National Geographic ship was coming in. And then we met at a different destination to get on the Zodiacs and back out to the boat.
Got it. Okay. Got it. What else do people need to know before they book this tour?
Gosh, I think that it'd be a great idea to go sooner than later due to the fact that those airports are opening up, and we want to get there before it becomes another Iceland when you have lots of crowds coming in. I think that if this is the kind of trip where you want to see something that is unlike anything else, I myself have not been to Alaska, so it's hard for me to compare. But I think that it is an excellent choice for someone who wants to see Greenland and knows that you can't just arrive in Nuuk and rent a car and drive around the island. That's not how it that's not how it works.
You can't drive the ring road like you can in Iceland. Okay.
Exactly. You can't do that. It's very long ferries to get from one day's destination to another. So this really solves the problem by just seeing an incredible sight and doing it from the sea, which really allows for a lot of stunning landscapes.
Excellent. What surprised you about the trip?
I think the sheer size of the cliffs and mountains. Nope. I was not expecting that at all. And I don't think I was expecting the supermarkets to be so well stocked. So fruit and pretty much everything you needed, fresh meat, looked like a lot of the beef or musk ox that was in the freezer section ready to go. The other thing that was really interesting, and I had not seen this before, is in the freezer, they had boxes for 14 days, 20 days, or 30 days worth of food. And so the box would have chicken, Arctic char, meat, sausages, all kinds of things in one box. You just get it and go. And so when this was set up for however many days you think you needed food, and so you could just grab your 30-day box and probably not have, ever have to come back to the market. So that was a surprise, I will say. I hadn't seen that before. But I'm supposing they get a lot of their fruit and other items from Iceland and Denmark, seeing as it's part of Denmark. They fund a lot in Greenland and subsidize a lot. So I think that is why you have stock markets.
Excellent. Anything else we want to say before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Oh, gosh. Not that I can think of at this point. I think I've covered about everything.
You are standing in the prettiest spot you saw in Greenland. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
So I'm going to have to go with my hike in Qeqertarsuaq. I'm standing near a waterfall and a river canyon and on my right, and I'm surrounded by grassy rocks sprinkled with these tiny Arctic flowers, and I'm staring at monumental icebergs floating by and colorful cottages in the background.
I feel like you were ready for that.
I thought a lot about it because I really debated between that and sitting in the ice fjord. Okay. It's really a tough call. They're both magnificent for different reasons. Technically, it's a tie, but I went with the Qeqertarsuaq because it had a little bit more diversity to it.
Okay, excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Greenland.
Oh, it has to be the sled dogs. You're hiking up from the mouth of the ice fjord, and then one group starts, and then they all start howling at the same time. And it's quite a sight, and it's quite a cacophony of noise. And I never experienced that anywhere else but in Greenland.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize this trip in just three words, what three words would you use?
I would say wild, remote, and breathtaking.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again is Rebecca Merrill from Manopause. Okay. What is Manopause.com?
So Manopause.com is a website that is basically men's lifestyle and women too, but this is addressing health and fitness, relationships, food and drink, travel, sports, entertainment, humor, a book club, everything you could ever want. And I have written about 14 articles for the travel section in this for this website. And it was started by a friend of mine. And so this is something that I love the content on this. It's changing all the time. And Dr. Larry Pollack and Michael Esrig have done a great job with this particular website. If you fall into that age group, you might want to check it out.
For people, it says, who have crossed the 50-yard line of life.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've crossed that line, Chris, but maybe you're still in your early 40s.
I am not. I have to say, when people say I'm middle-aged, I have to point out to them people do not live to be 124. So. Some do, but the odds are against it. Excellent. Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your trip, even if I didn't get to go with you.
Oh, I'm so sorry you weren't there. You would have loved it. It was great to be on here, Chris. Thank you so much.
A special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and a special thanks to Ravon Latifli, who became the latest patron of the show this week. If you're interested in learning more about supporting Amateur Traveler, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. Speaking of patrons, I heard from Randy Roher, also former guest on the show, who very much enjoyed the episode on visiting Nepal. Kathmandu is my favorite city in the world. It is simply magical chaos and a wonderful mix of Hinduism and Buddhism. You never know what you'll see around the next corner, with cows, monkeys, fruit bats in trees, and street-side barber chairs. Your guest's itinerary seems like a nice introduction to Nepal, mixing city, villages, and a short trek in the Himalayan foothills. The Patan Museum and Durbar Square is excellent. Buhadnath Stupa and Swayambhunath Temple are not to be missed. I've visited Kathmandu and Nepal at least 5 times as launching points for treks in Nepal, and probably another 5 separate visits to nearby Lhasa and Tibet. This part of the world is fascinating. I usually describe it as a complete but wonderful attack on all the senses. Nepal is a wonderful destination for a somewhat seasoned traveler. If it's your first time outside your home country, you may be shocked, but hopefully warm to the chaos. I love visiting Kathmandu and Nepal, but not sure I could live there. Thanks so much, Randy. And he adds, Fire and Ice is an excellent authentic pizzeria in Kathmandu. The owners are from Italy and brought excellent authentic pizza to KTM over 25 years ago. Don't forget, there are still openings available in the Amateur Traveler trip to Morocco in April of 2024. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.